CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor from the surface of the planet Earth. We're headed to Boca Chica, Texas, which is a wonderland waiting for the next launch. Bob Zimmerman, he's here from Behind the Black, his website. Starship prototype is the change in topic here. What is a Starship prototype compared to what we had in the first launch of Super Heavy and Starship? Good evening to you, Bob.
Good evening, John. Well, everything's a prototype at this stage. The Starship prototype that launched on that test launch about a month and a half ago was the 24th Starship prototype. The several of those prototypes were actually done short suborbital flights and crashed or landed. Some were built and then abandoned. They took them apart. And with each one, they were upgrading and improving, making improvements. The Super Heavy that launched about 6 weeks ago was prototype number seven. It was the seventh prototype that had been built of Super Heavy. Well, now SpaceX is gearing up for the next orbital test flight of Super Heavy Starship. And they have always said they're going to be, up to now, they've been saying they're going to use the prototype number nine. They're skipping number eight. They basically took it apart. It wasn't you know, they figured out things and it didn't work, so they took it apart and they put the improvements into number nine. They've got 10, 11, and 12, 13 already under construction or built already, but they want to use nine. So that's for Super Heavy, and they are not sure which prototype they were going to put on top of Starship. They have several in the assembly line available, some more advanced. But they decided to use the next one in line, prototype number 25, even though it doesn't have all the upgrades that they put into later prototypes, 27, 26, 28, that are there and could be flown. And the reason they're doing that, I think, is because they might as well fly it. They've got it. It exists. It could fly. And the main purpose of that next orbital test flight is really going to be working out the kinks on Super Heavy. So this way they can do a flight, figure out some more things about Super Heavy. If they're lucky, they'll get into orbit, and the prototype number 25 will get into orbit if they're lucky. If not, it's not a big loss. They literally get it out of their assembly building, get it out of the way, and they get to test Super Heavy again. So that's the plan. They can use prototype number 25 for the next launch. According to SpaceX, it's going to take about a month to do the launch pad modifications from the damage from the first launch and also the upgrades to make sure that damage won't occur next time. And then another month of testing before the next test flight. So that means the earliest SpaceX expects to be able to fly that next flight is early August. So that gives the FAA two full months to approve the launch license. I predict that come August, that launch license is still not going to be approved, and we have no clear idea when that approval will come. And based upon the Biden administration's policies here in terms of regulation and the history of the FAA, I am pretty confident that approval is not going to come in August or September, or maybe October. In fact, I think there's a pretty good chance it's not going to come before the end of this year. They are trying to slow SpaceX down for political reasons that are cutting off one's nose to spite one's face, but that's nonetheless what they're doing.
Bob, when they have different prototypes, are they moving the pipes around inside? Is that what they're doing, experimenting with the feed of the fuel to the engines or
You're raising one particular engineering question, but you got to remember this is rocket science. So there's numerous engineering things they've got to learn. Things having to do with the engines, the design of the rocket, with the starships having to do with orbital tiles and thermal protection for coming back. Will the tile system they've developed work? There's so many things that they have to learn, and so each prototype takes advantage of what didn't work on the previous prototypes, is upgraded along those lines, and each one gets closer to a final version. This is essentially what they did with the Falcon 9. They went through many iterations before they reached the version they have now, which is incredibly reliable, reusable, and flies routinely over and over and over again with no serious problems, and in fact doesn't need a lot of refurbishing from flight to flight. But it took a long time to get there, and that's essentially what's going on. So it's not just that. They might not be moving pipes around, but they might be, you know, refining the kind of alloys they use, the pumping system. They might refine the engine. They might have software revisions they have to do, which is probably biggest thing, I think. And that's the kind of stuff that's going on.
Records in space, 17 people in orbit. Who are they, Bob, and who's responsible?
We have on ISS, of course, two crews that were put up before NASA. That's six people. And then we got four people put up by a private company, Axiom, using Dragon capsule for a commercial flight. They were up there for 8 days. And then we have the Chinese had three people on their station, plus three more were launched this past weekend. And so the result is that there are 17 people in space. That's six Chinese citizens, five Americans, three Russians, two Saudis, and one United Arab Emirate astronaut. And so this is the record, 17. The previous record had been 14 people in orbit at one time. We now have two space stations, so whenever they're doing a crew shift, when a new crew goes up, you've got the stations have double the number of people on board. And it's essentially what happened with China, and you add that to the many people on ISS, and boom, we have a record.
We have the Chinese boasting of something else. China sends first civilian into orbit as Xi Jinping, the General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party, pursues the eternal dream. Again, Bob, this is the Chinese space program not participating in ISS and not inviting international attention because it's a military program. So we can presume this civilian is military? Who is, I mean, what do we know?
Yeah, that's just propaganda. It's like the Soviet Union. It's utter garbage. Nobody that launches on a Chinese rocket is a civilian. He's a professor of engineering, so he's not a jet pilot or a test pilot. He's an engineering professor. But trust me, any engineering professor in a college in China is got military clearances if he's going up onto that space station. And so he's part of the military operation of China. It's propaganda. They're running this program like the Soviet Union did as a propaganda mission to sell themselves. But there's another interesting aspect of China's space program is that for the last decade and a half, they've actually been using it as a managerial training program for the political leadership of China. They have routinely now, for the last decade, transferred successful managers from the space program to very high political positions, many times provincial governors, the same as, you know, our governors in the United States, which means they're very powerful. So it's a training program more than anything else. And, you know, so Xi is selling it to make it sound like they're a wonderful country. And, you know, it's a great achievement, but it's still propaganda.
Bob, we move from the Chinese space program to the India space program, and they've launched a satellite. What kind?
It's a GPS-type satellite. It's India's second generation. It was the first of a new constellation of second-generation GPS-type satellites that they've built and launched. They had a failure. They lost one previously. The launch failed. What made this launch interesting this past weekend was that it was the fourth launch by India in this year, which matches the entire total from last year. The year's not even half over. And India was a country that when the COVID panic occurred, they panicked three times over, and they literally shut down for 3 years. So it appears with the four launches so far this year, with more to come, that they might finally be recovering from their panic over COVID. The launch was important, too, for them because it was using their geosynchronous rocket, the biggest rocket, the GSLV. That's successful. That's the kind of that rocket, a variation of that rocket, will be used for their manned mission they're hoping to do either next year or the year after, John.
And we move from India's program to something non-transparent, but we have reporting on it. North Korea has notified Japan. Why, Bob? What about their rocket program needs notification?
All internationally, when you launch an orbital rocket, you're supposed to let everyone know. And I think that if a country, well, I think North Korea abides by this. And so they notified Japan that they are going to do an orbital launch of a satellite. They call it a military reconnaissance satellite, an orbital launch in a launch window from May 31st to June 1st. And it's possible that the rocket will fly over the Yellow Sea, East China Sea, and east of the Philippines, Luzon Island. And so they notified Japan's Coast Guard, so the ships in the area should be aware of the possibility of falling debris. Because, you know, North Korea is like China. They don't really care if they drop things on other people or even on their own people. And so that's their announcement. Now, both Japan and South Korea have protested this launch, saying it violates sanctions against North Korea. Well, what does North Korea care? And China actually had an official announce that if that debris goes over any of Japanese territory, they're going to shoot it down. And I don't know if Japan even has that capability. It's a sophisticated missile capability, and I don't think Japan has that. But that's the threat he made. So this is come around June 1st. We should see some fireworks in the Eastern Asia, John.
And Bob, this is about the future. We've got capabilities in Asia that are dangerous for any space program, but at the same time, these countries are very close together, capable of reaching into orbit. So it means that we're introducing another kind of aggression, information aggression that you can glean from orbital satellites.
Yeah, you know, this is a new colonial movement. This is all the countries in the world, both good and bad, want to get into space. Some for reconnaissance and surveillance purposes, like North Korea. Others for any number of reasons, like propaganda or engineering industrial development, like China or India. But everybody wants to get in. The trouble is that rockets are essentially a variation of a missile, and so they demonstrate a capability which is a threat to all neighbors. And that's why you get tensions when this happens, John.
Groundhog Day. The IG at NASA has found more difficulties in the SLS program. Didn't we do this story, Bob?
We've done this story now about 40 times in the last decade. And a decade ago, I said this program was a disaster, but it continues to be pushed by Congress because it's jobs program. And I want to point to, so they're finding that the continuing cost overruns and mismanagement are, quote, obscene, as Eric Berger, quote, described. This was an IG report into the Inspector General that said that the cost there's endless cost rises. It's all cost plus contracts. There's no control. It's way behind schedule. None of this is news. This is all the way it works. And I have to tell you that these problems are not a bug, but a feature of SLS and Orion. The goals of that program are not to build a rocket to explode a solar system, but to create an endless jobs program in congressional districts here on Earth. And it means if nothing gets built but they spend money each year, Congress is happy. Of course, it does mean that we're robbing America of the opportunity to use that cash more efficiently to have a real space program.
I want to underline something, Bob. Congress spends the money.
Yes. It is his Congress's decision. Remember, you used to call the SLS, the Space Launch System, you used to call it the Senate Launch System. It was imposed on the Obama administration by Congress. It didn't have a purpose. They tried to improvise a purpose for it by going to the moon, but it's really jerry-rigged when, in truth, Starship can do that, and Super Heavy can do the whole thing much cheaper and more efficiently. We're looking at really a disaster by Congress, incompetency by Congress, corruption by Congress, unwillingness to spend the taxpayers' money intelligently by Congress. It's basically Congress. And you know, it's our own fault. We vote them in, you know, our own fault.
And Bob, a detail about SLS. They're still committed to the one use and it's gone model, correct? There's been no.
Oh, there's no way SLS will anything ever be reusable, John. It's not. It's zero reusability. In fact, they are destroying many times reused shuttle engines in that program. They basically salvage parts from the shuttle that were used many, many times, engines, precious engines, and they're just dumping them in the ocean every time they fly them.
Bob Zimmerman, who keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.